If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
There are four, no, there are five, by the way, large, unmarked, and unopened plastic bags of tortilla chips in the station kitchen area. Their origin and time of arrival is unknown.
Sports Talk Saturday.
If you've never smoked and you've only tried one maybe spoiled bag of tortilla chips, you might only pay $20 a month for health insurance.
On WGR.
Be like Lou. He's on bag number two.
Sports Radio 550.
Welcome into Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer here with you as there was a nice little historic moment last night in a hockey game there between the Washington Capitals and the Chicago Blackhawks. Something pretty awesome to see, actually. And we'll have Bruce Nolan in just a couple moments here as well. I'm excited now for the NFL draft. We're going full pivot into draft sicko mode at this point. I'm done talking about anything else with the Bills. I'm talking about players that they should draft, why I want them to draft them, and you're going to be sick of me talking about them. Bruce Nolan will be on in, we'll call it about like 2 minutes or so to make sure that we get his guys. Let's see what Bruce is thinking about for his guys. But last night, Ovechkin ties Wayne Gretzky, and it's done in the most Ovechkin-esque way possible. Two goals. He's on hat-trick watch for the whole night. But that second goal, it was iconic. It wasn't a clean zone entry. Andrew Mangiapane like kicks the puck to his stick, shovels it over to Carlson, who then no-looks it to Ovi, who hits it from the circle, and we're done here. A great goal. I can't fathom the way that it would have been, though, if he ended up winning or breaking the record, I should say, on an empty net. I feel like they'd be empty inside a little bit. I feel like it'd be a little hollow. You want it to be against a goaltender. And after Ryan Leonard scored the empty netter to make it 5-3, Ovechkin's out there for like the last minute 30. He still gets two quality shot attempts on Spencer Knight, and he has to make some pretty good saves in order to not be the guy to not only give up the tying goal for the record, but also not to give up the record breaker. It was awesome to see, though, that game last night. Everyone's huddled around televisions at that point. People are texting each other. I can only imagine if you're out and about watching it. Good for the fans that were there. For it to have at least been tying or breaking, I would have wanted one of those moments to be in front of Caps fans. Because otherwise, like, I feel like you deprive your own fan base of something if he did both of those things on the road. And we'll talk plenty more about that later on here. as well as other things hockey. We've got plenty to do today, including Trevor Hauer at 12:30. We get a Bandits check-in as they've lost a pair of games in a row, actually. UB Women playing in the Women's NIT Final tonight at UB, the Alumni Arena. And we'll have Jack Cruiser on at 1 o'clock to talk about that with the UB Women's team making their championship run in the NIT. But first things first, we pivot back to football. Yesterday was the, I do believe they called it the topping out ceremony on the stadium, the last steel beam being put in place on the top. And it looks like everything is on pace for the new stadium to go up. And this will be the last year of Highmark Stadium. In the place that it was, in the place that people affectionately still call the Ralph to this day. And that's pretty much it when it comes to talking about the Bills that are not about the NFL draft, because now I've got Bruce Nolan on with me from the Bruce Exclusive. And Bruce, it's sicko draft mode time. I do have to ask you a couple questions because we haven't talked in a little bit about the contracts that the Bills were able to get re-signed. But other than that, it's draft mode, baby.
Yeah, we're getting to the point now here shortly where, just so you know, all of the takes will have been taked.
Yes.
At some point. We took all the takes. The takes have been done. We don't need any. It feels like that spot happens roughly around 3 weeks before the NFL draft, where we're all like, okay, we've looked at all the prospects we're going to look at. There really isn't much more to do, and there's always some crazy nonsense that comes out at that point where people start having like absolutely like insane takes because they just ran out of stuff to draw your attention. So I would just prepare yourself for the insanity that is the 3 weeks before the NFL draft.
It's smokescreen season there, Bruce. It's pretty much everyone's got their Pokemon. Use smokescreen, blind everyone. Here we go. Try to knock some stocks down and up according to a team's favor at that point. Bruce, when it comes down to it, though, everyone's got, quote-unquote, their guys, trademark pending. Bruce, I've got my guys, and for me, a couple of people like Nick Emmanuori is absolutely become my draft crush at this point, but also a guy like Shamar Stewart. I think that he's a player that if he's available at 21, you go up and get him. Or everyone's favorite at this point is Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan. Bruce Nolan, I've got you on here. Who are Bruce's guys?
So obviously it depends on the position, but if we're targeting the positions that are frequently mocked through the Buffalo Bills in the early rounds, you're talking about defensive tackle, edge rusher, cornerback, wide receiver. If you're thinking about those groups of people, ironically enough, you and I have very different opinions on Nick Emmanuori, believe it or not.
All right.
So the Nick Emmanuori blurb is actually going to come to my social media here today, but I just finished with him an hour ago, and I fired off a text and said, Nick Emmanuori is the Tremaine Edmonds of safety prospects.
Oh, my heart, Bruce. Oh, my God.
And I mean that in all the positives and all the negatives, which is the guy is literally almost without limit from a physical skill set standpoint. Maybe because he's too tall, you might think that, you know, he doesn't really have the smooth hips and flipping and man coverage, but ultimately I find myself going, come on, like, let's go. Like, I pull the trigger, come on. And you wonder if that kind of thing, which you saw with Tremaine Edmonds, people have a tendency mm-hmm. to look at that and go, you know what, we can make the trigger fire faster, right? We can work on the instincts. We can get him to pull the trigger more quickly on some of these things. And it just never happens. And that's my concern always with Nick Emmanuori, is that you're taking him with the idea that you can cause that trigger to fire faster than it has historically done. And that's always been a weird thing for me, because I don't project that out as highly. Now, that doesn't mean Emmanuori is not a good prospect, because let's be honest, if you're able to overcome that, you're talking about someone who is, as I mentioned, essentially without limits when it comes to physical ability. Like, there's nothing he really can't do aside from previously mentioned, you know, the hip elevation is going to give him some troubles there. Mm-hmm. But at safety, my guys are Malachi Starks and Xavier Watts.
Yep.
Those are my guys. And primarily because I think when you look at safety play in the NFL, there's a subclassification of safety prospects that happens every year. People who you think, okay, they're box people, and people who you think, okay, they're deep people. And to me, anybody who's stuck in one of those subset classifications gets a significant downgrade, because the ability to be multiple at safety and the ability to do many things is almost a requirement of the job in today's NFL. Having specialized safeties is a thing from the 1990s, and I prefer not to go back that direction. And when I look at people like Malachi Starks, people like Xavier Watts, the ability to play deep, the ability to show the instincts and the trigger, and you think to yourself, okay, what are their problems, right? When you look at a player like Xavier Watts, why is he not being looked at as a round one safety? It's the tackling, right?
Yep.
But it's not the ability to tackle interestingly. Like, he doesn't have disinterest in tackling. That's not what it is. He shows lack of optimal balance, and he's hyper aggressive, so he overruns things. And so you think, okay, if I can fix one of those two traits, just line out Eamon Warrior and Xavier Watts next to each other, you think, okay, which one of those two things can I as a coaching staff feel like I can fix, right? That's the reason why those two tiebreakers to me go to Xavier Watts in those instances. Malachi Starks is safety one for a lot of teams and probably for a lot of people, because you look at him and you go, okay, there's high-level body control, and that body control, you see it in coverage, and then you see it in the box, and you see it when he's pursuing the runs as well. And so it's a smooth athlete. You know, I think the agility numbers came in lower than you would have preferred for Malachi Starks, and that makes sense as to why you might see him see some separation in man at maybe the route break. But he has high-level acceleration. I mean, it's a 1.56 10-yard split. So, yeah, the window might crack open, but then he's going to slam it shut again because he can accelerate and close those windows, and that helps him make plays on the balls. So for me, that's a Starks, Watts, Emanuari, Andrew Mukaba, right? These are your kind of top four safeties in a lot of teams. And for me, it's Starks and Watts at the safety position. Now, other positions I have different guys, but I've rambled on too long already about my guys at the safety position. It's Starks and it's Watts.
Yeah, I love Starks and Watts too. I do think that Watts is an ideal grab for round two. Emanuari became my player when it came to, if the Bills are kind of stuck at 30, that would be the safety I would want, because I'm assuming Starks is going to be gone by then. But Emanuari has been the one that's been getting a nice little stock boost as of late on big boards, mock drafts of sorts. So, hey, you know what? If one causes the other to fall, I'm going to take either one of these guys and be happy with it. But if they can't get a safety in round one, I do think that it would be a slam dunk to get Xavier Watts in round two here. There's only one other guy in the back end that I think could be one of those both style players, Bruce, as you mentioned, and that's Kevin Winston Jr. from Penn State. He was out for the most of the year with an injury last year, but he is still a fantastic player that if the Bills are able to get him in like round four or something, I'd be ecstatic.
One of the great opportunities that the NFL draft gives a team is the ability to have a long memory when other teams have short memories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. How many players have we looked back at 2 years into their career and go, man, remind me again how they fell that far, right? And the answer is usually something like, I mean, we're dealing with that with Luther Burden right now as wide receiver in the first round. Wait, remind me again how he fell that far, right? And you go, okay, well, you know, it was not exactly a Missouri offense that was conducive to his success. And for Winston, it's going to be, of course, the injury. So for me, Winston is going to be one of those players that I think you would be looking at in that low first, high second round range, probably, if it wasn't for the injury. Now, I think that the thing that would probably still put him beneath Watts and beneath Starks for me is, again, the instincts. But there's length there that can help that. So one of the things that we've talked about is that length, speed, and instincts are three sides to kind of like a triangle. And it's the more of one you have, the less of the other two you might need. So for example, if you're a step ahead, you can afford to be a step slower, right? If you're 3 inches longer with your arm length, then you can afford to be 3 inches behind. So these things all work kind of in juxtaposition to be able to say, listen, are you where you need to be when you need to be there? It's those three things working in concert with each other. So you go, okay, you don't necessarily have to have high level at all three, but you have to have enough of one to make up for the lack of another. And so for Winston, it's a length thing, and I think it's a straight line speed thing. And I think that you can probably make up for maybe being a step slow on those things because you have the length and speed to make up for it. And I think that that's a conversation we should probably be having more often. I think we have it on the offensive side of the ball sometimes, but we don't have it on the defensive side of the ball.
Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive joining me on the Wesser Hotline here is the NFL Draft. We are 3 weeks away at this point. We're 3 weeks away from day three, where it's just we're slogging along. We've got full chaos at that point. But, of course, I mentioned the injury history thing, short memories where teams can have longer ones, and that screams Benjamin Morrison for me at cornerback from Notre Dame as well.
Yeah, Morrison's one of those players that I really think would be getting first-round hype.
Yes.
Like, good first-round hype, if not for that. And I think that when you are consistently drafting in the part of the NFL draft where the Bills are, players like Morrison, players like Winston, players that shouldn't be there if not for this one thing that's going to cause NFL teams to pass on someone they otherwise would not have, I think that becomes more important. So I'll give you a great, I don't know if it's a great metaphor, but it's a metaphor anyway. So I'm in my dynasty league. And for me, I am never drafting at a spot where I can get a high level quarterback. Like I just can't. My team's never bad enough to be in the top. So the only way I'm going to get that is by trying to pick somebody who falls. Last year, it was Michael Penix fell in the middle of the second round, for example, right? Or trading for one. Or the point is that you have to be creative when you know that your team, based on the way it is built, is not going to be bad enough to get you that caliber of prospect. So how do you get that caliber of prospect? Well, the answer is you buy low, right? You buy the dip. And he's one of those players. So for me, I think you slap on the tape and you go, wow, this is a first round quarterback. You know what I mean? And I mean, what does Morrison not do that you would otherwise feel comfortable with in a first-round quarterback? When you compare him to recent first-round quarterbacks, even back into, you know, Kyrie Elam and Tre'Davious White, and you think to yourself, okay, is it just the arm length? Like, is that it? Because that doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, nowadays you look at the player that got taken ahead of the Buffalo Bills that caused them to then jump up for Kyrie Elam, which I still contend that they wanted who the Chiefs got that year. So for me, is it just the arm length? Is that it? Because if that's the only thing, then we need to work on, as I mentioned, the other two sides of that triangle, and he's got those things, which makes me feel more comfortable.
Yeah, I also like Morrison because of the fact that he is a willing combatant when it comes to tackling, and that's a staple of the Bills' defense these days, is having a corner that is not just willing but also capable. He's good at shedding blocks to get off as well and make some plays. Who are some other corners, though, that you're looking at, Bruce, as some of the my guys, quote-unquote?
So I absolutely love cornerbacks, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think that one of the players that screams Billsy in the mid rounds for me is Zay Alexander. Zay Alexander might have some of the best coverage technique and some of the best tape of any corners in the class. I will say that the athleticism being below average and 31-inch arms are going to cause teams to drop him down their boards. Like, I don't think Zay Alexander, because athleticism matters so much for corners, I don't think he's going to be an early day two guy. But there's teach tape, like, all the way through the route and the catch point. So, like, late third for Zay Alexander, maybe early day three, I think I could see something like that. I think if you double dip or if you miss out on your dudes, he's somebody who I think brings a very high floor. I don't necessarily know if the lack of athletic traits is going to limit the ceiling, but Azarai Thomas is someone who I think that at 30, if you don't have things go the way you want to go or in the second round, I think that the Bills could, especially if they're going to lean into more man principles, if they're going to lean into more press in 2025, I think Azarai Thomas, Florida State, fits the bill, pun intended.
And there you go.
I think that he gives you what you thought you might have been getting in Kyrie Elam. So I think those are two of my guys when it comes to potential Bills picks at corner that we haven't already discussed.
This is why I get you on here, Bruce, because this is how we have to do it. Finally, pass rusher is the last position that I really want to be able to explore a little bit more with you here. I don't know why, but I've got this distinct feeling that someone's going to fall between Shamar Stewart, Mykel Williams, or James Pierce Jr. One of these guys is going to end up taking some like weird fall and start flirting around 21, 22, and I'm going to start like pacing back and forth on the cameras here during the stream to have someone get picked and for the Bills to get to trading up to go get them. But there are plenty of other options within round two as well. I look at a guy like a Josiah Stewart from Michigan as probably one of my favorites there on that end. But at pass rusher, what are you looking at there?
To me, the guy that I would be interested in having the Bills trade up for, like if they moved up and he were to fall into the 20s, is Nick Skirton. So he's a guy that I've been very, very interested in. I think he fits the Bills' historic profile. Now, one of the things that's interesting when I say historic profile is that for a long time, when you talked about Bills' edge rushers being drafted, you were talking about Gregory Rousseau, you were talking about A.J. Epenesa, long-armed, heavy-handed compression wrestlers, right? And then they go out and they sign Von Miller, and you're like, oh, okay, that combo breaker there, right? And then they draft somebody out of Troy, and you go, okay, combo breaker. Like, we're still Javon Solomon. Okay, is this a new Bills, right? But if you go back to the way that you think that the Bills historically drafted, Skirton may most cleanly check the boxes. Now, he had dramatic weight loss. Like, he weighed in at 257 at the scouting combine. He was listed at 285. Hmm. So it's like, whoa, hold on. Like, how is he going to play in his new body? But if you look at the tape with him in his heavier frame, I mean, you saw him play as a stand-up linebacker. You saw him playing coverage, right? Now, he may not have the bendiness that you would expect to see from a pass rusher, but you've seen his profile. Like, I think of George Karloftis, right? You see profiles yep. like that win in the NFL. And so when you think about a clean, mature array of pass rush maneuvers, this is not a one-speed pitcher. Right? This is somebody who brings multiple pitches into the arsenal, massive motor. You think to yourself, okay, like the floor is so high on a player like that, that that's somebody who I have interest in. I feel differently on Pierce than a lot of people do. I think he's a very linear, straight line guy without a lot of maturity into his pass rush. I think he's a lot more work than people otherwise would think he is. Really linear, straight line speed is fantastic. Donovan Azaraku is a player that I think that historically I would not have looked at for the Buffalo Bills. I would have said 10 years ago, a player like that comes out, I would have said, oh, he's a 3-4 guy. Right? He's a 3-4 outside linebacker, right? But the lines get really blurry in today's NFL between those types of players, and the Bills have now shown a propensity for that type of player. He's agile. He's bendy. The fastest three cone, right, amongst yep. defensive linemen at the combine. And exceptionally long for 240 and 6'2", because we have a tendency to think height and translate it to length, and that's not true. There's lots of people who are 6'2 and have really long arms. And so he has really long arms, like an 85th percentile wingspan for those kind of things. So I do think that disengagement, despite the length, is not something that's a strength. But if you play him on the outside shoulder and you don't ask him to play, you know, basically connected to an offensive tackle and give him some opportunity to have some space in isolation, like backside kind of stuff, I think that there's a really good high-level player in there for Azaraku. I'd be interested in that in the first round as well.
All right, Bruce, I can't let you go without culminating in the defensive tackle madness, because Zach and I kind of tried to take a little homage from last year with the wide receiver train, and we decided to say, hey, defensive tackle, no matter what in this draft, everyone, let's jump on here. The beef wagon. It's a smaller train, less noisy, less popular, but but you need it. Yeah. D-tackle is amongst the deepest in this draft class from everything that we've been hearing for months now. Who are some of the guys that you would like to target here? I mean, I've heard everyone and their brother, their sister talking about Kenneth Grant. Let's find some other options here. I like guys like a C.J. Wester and Alfred Collins in round two or round three if you end up trading back into round three. Jordan Phillips from Maryland is another guy that is a perfect day two prospect, I think, for what the Bills need, that size-eating one technique guy.
I agree with you on Alfred Collins. I am an Alfred Collins guy. I think that if it wasn't for some turnover on the Bills defensive staff, I would otherwise say he just doesn't fit the mold, right? I mean, 6'6", 332-pound tackles who play a big chunk of their snaps directly over the center, right? That's not what the team has historically gravitated towards.
Right.
But when you have an 85-inch wingspan, you have excellent body composition. Like, this is not a sloppy 332-pound guy, right? He's very, very well built. And you have a great motor, which you don't usually see in players who are north of 332 pounds. You think to yourself, wow, like, I can really do some stuff with that. And if you're thinking about somebody who you need to two-gap, one of the most important traits you're looking for is, do they utilize their length to be able to keep an offensive lineman in bay until they can disengage? And you see some sheds from Alfred Collins where he is just disposing of 300-pound people and going, yeah, no, I'm done with you now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the word I keep using is dismissive. Alfred Collins is a dismissive player. And so I think that there's work to be done there. I think that his balance isn't great. And so there's some low lows with Alfred Collins reps, because you think to yourself, oh, wow, he lost balance and he got blown up more than he should for a 6'6", 332-pound man. But I think that those things are, you look at those things, you think, man, that's coachable. Like, I can help him with the balance part, right? So much of dealing with prospects is what can you fix and what can you not? Because otherwise, if everyone's a perfect prospect, right, they all go high in the first round. Yeah. And so for me, when I look at Collins, I'm a fan. I think the other person who I look at is Darius Alexander.
Yep, from Toledo.
From Toledo. I think that because he played so much three tech, you're going to naturally just say he's a three tech. But again, it's about what they do, not about necessarily where they played. And so when you think about the ability to engage and keep offensive linemen at length and use that length appropriately, he's got 34-inch arms, right? And he's a high-level athlete and constantly active hands. I mean, this is a guy who's not staying content with his hands. And so you think to yourself, wow, that guy can two gap. Like, he can peek and clear that thing pretty well. And so I think that that's a position where you could look at this guy, because he was kind of the dude, right, on Toledo's defensive line. And you think, if you surround him with NFL quality players and he doesn't have to do the stuff that he had to do, the reason he had to do it at Toledo, he could be better as a pro than he was as a college player. I think two of my guys in the, not necessarily the, oh, you're going to have to trade up for them range, are Alexander and Collins.
Yep, that is perfect. Bruce, I wish we had more time, but I've got great news for you. If you would be welcome to, I would love to have you back on day three of the draft once again.
Call me up, man.
All right, we'll make sure. My people will get in touch with your people.
Sounds good, good. I'll tell my people to be expecting it.
Bruce, I appreciate it, and hey, you know what to do from here. Plug it.
If for some reason you listened to this and you thought, gosh, that guy's awesome, I want some of that, first off, I'd like to question your mental health. But also, you can listen to my show every Thursday morning. You can type in the Bruce Exclusive anywhere you find your podcasts, and we'll do some fun stuff. We'll randomly break out into song and compare people to food, and it'll be great.
It's always a great time. And speaking of a great time, thank you for joining us, especially on such a short notice here, Bruce. I appreciate you.
Happy to do it, man. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. That's Bruce Nolan, the Bruce Exclusive there on the West Her Hotline. Got to get to break. Come back. You remember that Ovechkin thing that I was talking about? Yeah. Let's do a little bit of that coming up next here. Sports Talk Saturday rolls on WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And away from Mangiapane, second unit here, Ovechkin, he scores! Alex Ovechkin has 894, and the bench empties here at Capital One Arena! for the most all time in NHL history.
You know, there's not enough said about the play that sets that up. When Alex Ovechkin scores 894, he ties the record in front of the Caps fans. It was actually some solid defense at first from Chicago at the blue line. The puck gets squeezed at the boards, and Mangiapane has to kick that puck to his stick and find a way. Then Carlson's in trailing, and Ovechkin's all the way out to the left, heading to his spot. And Carlson, that was a shifty no-look pass. Eyes up the whole time, shuffles it over, and Spencer Knight knows it's coming. He even gets a piece of it, but it goes in the net. And that is how you break a record, or tie a record, I should say. Now comes the other part of this, breaking the record. And there was something interesting that happened last night. I, for one, am glad that Ryan Leonard stormed off with the empty net goal for the first of his career. He gets to share an iconic night with an iconic goal of his own. You know, you get to keep that puck. Someone went right for the net for that thing. But the thing that happened is everyone had their eyes glued onto the entirety of that game. The minute that he scored the first goal of the game against Chicago. Because now the next one is the tire. And then there's the NHL. It's like, it's on NHL Network and ESPN Plus, and it's like, you do know a hat trick with Alex Ovechkin is in the realm of possibility, right, guys? You should be putting this thing, you should be moving it around on networks. Find a way at this point. But then something fascinating happened post-game. Because, you know, the empty net goal happens, it's 5-3, and Ovechkin's not on the ice for it, obviously. Per Elliot Friedman, post-game, Washington coach Spencer Carberry confirmed that Ovechkin did not go on the ice with Chicago's net empty. He wants to break the record with a goaltender in the crease. Which then kind of helps out with flavor. Flavor as in, how do you want him to score that last goal? How mad would people be if he scores an empty netter? Well, it sounds like Ovechkin's taking that second question and crumpling it up and throwing it out the window, which is perfectly fine.
I was listening to trying to find that clip that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He actually,
Spencer Carberry, yep.
Spencer Carberry said that when the goaltender went back into the net after it was 5-3, he yep. was like on the ice for a minute and a half.
He was on for a minute 36 to end the game. So, yeah, no, Ovechkin wants to break it against a goaltender, and I'm more than happy that the player wants to think that way. Well, what if he doesn't get it? Well, then guess what? He still ends the season tied. That's not a bad way to be there. But also, if I'm asking five goaltenders to not give up one shot to Alex Ovechkin in five games, good luck with that. Though the next player that he faces in net has never given up a goal to him, and Ilya Sorokin, a fellow Russian, an opportunity to have the record broken. It would be on the road. But it's interesting nonetheless. I like this because it's good for hockey to get a little bit of some shine, especially because we're heavy into the NFL draft. March Madness is concluding soon enough. We've got baseball beginning. Hockey needs something to be able to stay relevant, and here it is. This is the opportunity that the NHL is going to be looking for. I would imagine every single game now has some sort of national scope on it. Otherwise, well, Gary, you and your league are failing once again. I'm interested to see how this next one happens. But at the very least, I'm happy that Caps fans got to see one of the moments in person, be it tying the record or breaking it. They're on the road against the Islanders, but then their next game is at home, one of two remaining, against Carolina. I don't think that Ovechkin sits to try to score it in front of his own fan base. Like, that's just, you're trying to score within two games at that point. That's too risky. But I am fascinated to see how it happens, where it happens. If he doesn't score against the Islanders, for example, I can only imagine the ticket prices for the game against Carolina, where there's already some nasty blood, by the way. In their last game, Chatfield throws McMichael onto the ice when McMichael doesn't have his helmet on in a fight, and he hip tackles him, really. Not a thing you like to see in fighting circles necessarily, kind of a low-class move. So there's already going to be an interesting storyline within Carolina and Washington in that game. If it's also a game where it's the next game where Ovechkin can try to break the record, the crowd will be beyond packed for that game in Washington. But which goalie is going to have their name unfortunately marked into the history books? That's going to be the question. How does Ovechkin score it? Does he do it in his typical way? In the circle on the power play? The Ovechkin office, as it has become to be known for him. Who knows? But all of it's fascinating. And again, hockey is thanking their lucky stars that this is what is going on for them right now. Considering where we are in the sports season, considering the hype that the Four Nations tournament had brought you, to have this concluding the season the same way, it's already a big deal. Not to mention, the other absolutely disgusting part about this is that Alex Ovechkin broke his leg this year at age 39. And still has scored 41 goals this year. It is not hyperbole to say that he is the best to do it when it comes to putting the puck in the net. Because goaltending has evolved over the years. And Gretzky really was at his peak. He was the setup guy too. He wasn't just the one that had the most amount of goals. Nobody is touching the assists. Nobody. Like, not even close. The fact that Ovechkin is going to break Gretzky's record for goal scoring is already astronomical in and of itself. But Alex Ovechkin, his lowest season of goals is 24 in a COVID-shortened season. Ovechkin has had two seasons shortened from COVID, an entire season locked out, and half of another season locked out. This record should be gone already. But it's not. And yet it is going to be. The way that goaltenders have evolved, the amount of games that were missed due to just circumstances not within his realm. Not even injury. He has been relatively a healthy player for most of his career, as a matter of fact. One goal away, and now the question is, all right, when? When's it happening? And that is something that we're all going to be watching with bated breath. He's on a four-game goal streak, by the way, which started against Buffalo. In the Sabres' 8-5 win. So the Sabres, it comes off a little bit as an afterthought at that point because, yeah, the Sabres won 8-5 that game. And Ovechkin scored, but the game was already well in hand. But now you have an opportunity to make this happen. But it's good that the home fans at least got to see the tying goal. Because that's what I would really want, is for at least one of those moments to be in front of your home fans And that manages to happen last night. We come back, Booty Cheek of the Week, with incredible feats like this. There are also incredible takes. Incredible doesn't always mean great. What do I mean by that? Well, stay tuned to find out. It's nice to have the show back at its usual time slot, by the way. Now things aren't out of order. The Booty Cheek of the Week still ends the first hour, but it's just the first hour is 11 o'clock. However, as I teased, with every great moment comes some not great reaction somewhere. Somewhere. And this is not to dismiss the typical opinion of like some fan trying to be a troll or something like that. No. The point of this segment typically is to hold people in a different position in check. And for me, that is whoever the hell runs the Hockey News Twitter account.
Uh-oh, what happened?
So, Ovechkin ties the record last night, and the Hockey News pulls out the patented "How can I make this about Toronto" trope. With the tweet saying, "Austin Matthews has a higher goals per game average than Alex Ovechkin." Okay, cool. I don't like when you have to be the contrarian just for contrarian's sake. I feel like you should be able to enjoy a moment like this in sports history where people of a generation get to see a record get broken. That's cool. That doesn't mean I need you standing in the corner going, "Oh yeah, well, Austin Matthews scores at a better average." That's so snotty. Like, this is why people don't like the Toronto Maple Leafs. That right there from the Hockey News. If a Toronto fan says it, that's just a fan trying to be a fan, trying to make it about their team. Like, that's a normal thing that they should do. Not should do. That's a normal thing that they can do. Hell, the amount of times Bills and Ravens fans this year were arguing on social media and then Chiefs fans would be like, "Oh yeah, neither of you have beaten the Chiefs in the playoffs." Like, stop it. This is that. But in hockey, of, "Oh yeah, well, hockey is centered around Toronto." Oh my God. It screams such a bougie take for a team that has not won a championship since 1967. Now, I really want the Sabres to sign Mitch Marner. Just because of that, I want him to be the one to spite you next. I want the Sabres to be the team that spites you next. I desperately want Ottawa to beat you in the first round. So then you'll have lost to the Bruins in the first round. The Lightning in the first round. The freaking Canadiens in the first round. Columbus. Let's make Ottawa next, and then the Sabres sign Mitch Marner so that the Sabres could be the next one to shove a dagger into your side. Because of that. If Austin Matthews plays until he's 39, guess what? We have a conversation 12 years from now about if he can break it. Matthews has also missed as many games so far in his career that Ovechkin has missed in his entire career. Matthews is 27. Ovechkin is 39. So, Hockey News, welcome to your reward of the Booty Cheek of the Week, a segment that you're never going to hear and probably not care. But this is why people hate Toronto. That right there. Snotty, snobby-ass take. Austin Matthews has a higher goals per game average than Alex Ovechkin. We'll come back. Talk a little bit more about the NFL draft. I'm getting very excited about how the Bills are in position to really grab whatever the hell they want at defense with their first round pick. And of course, we'll talk to Trevor Howard at the bottom of the next hour. Bandits, they've lost a couple games in a row. Can they get off the schneid? And then the UB women competing for the NIT championship tonight at Alumni Arena. We'll talk to Jack Cruiser at 1 o'clock. This is Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer here with you on a wonderful Saturday for you. It's nice outside here on WGR.